And episode number 25 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast is brought to you by all of the great travel deals I got Sunday night for my Monday afternoon trip to Baltimore to see the Yankees play.
Welcome to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Here's radio host and lifelong Yankees fan, Ralphie Aversa.
We really should pitch some of those travel websites, by the way, to maybe sponsor this podcast so we can finally have a sponsor and maybe break even. That'd be nice. Thankfully, our overhead costs aren't that much, but still. Welcome to episode number 25 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. It's been a great season two so far as we've released weekly since the start of the season. We've had some great guests as well, and we'll continue that trend this week with our buddy Seth Everett, who, of course, you've seen on Baseball Tonight. You've read his articles on Forbes. He currently hosts a couple podcasts in addition to his, I believe, literally 9 jobs. The guy is all over the place on radio stations all across the country. We'll chat with Seth about baseball, some of the trends in the game, how it affects maybe the way we watch the game or don't watch the game. Very interesting conversation coming up with Seth Everett here on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I, of course, am Ralphie Aversa, and if you follow us on social networks at Pinstripe Lanes, I'm at Ralphie Aversa. Then yes, you already knew that Monday I went to Baltimore, my favorite place to see the Yankees on the road, Oriole Park at Camden Yards, and got to see that amazing comeback Monday night. Gary Sanchez, of course, the go-ahead 3-run homer, and Chapman came in, shut it down, and good night the lights, time to drink your Natty Bows over in Fells Point. Here's what happened. I was actually going to go to the game that's happening right now while we tape this, the Thursday afternoon game. I was going to... The train situation was a little weird because the prices had gotten pretty high and the times weren't ideal either. So I was going to drive down to the game today, leave first thing in the morning, 12:35 start, and then come back right after. And thankfully, my girlfriend made a very valid point as I was plotting this all out. Game today's at 12:35. Let's say it ends at 3:34. I get in the car around 4:35, the Thursday heading into Memorial Day weekend, driving up 95 North. How's that working out for you? Not too well. So Sunday night, I decided to call a very quick audible and instead booked a rental car and a hotel to go down to Baltimore just, 12 hours later for the game Monday. CarRentals.com for the car rental. Hotwire.com, always used for the hotels. Got both out the door for about $150. Not bad. Obviously, they're more cost with the car because you're buying insurance, the easy pass, the gas, so on and so forth. But made the trip down Monday afternoon, checked into the hotel, was at the Lord Baltimore within walking distance to Camden, valeted the car, changed into my away gray Jeter jersey, walked over, had my, as is tradition, had a quick pregame beverage over at Pickles, a little $4 Bud Light tall boy. Down that real quick, walked into Camden, bought a ticket on my way down 95, 6 rows behind the Yankee dugout, a single ticket on StubHub for $60. I will say, obviously, the good of the trip was, the main good of the trip was the game and the fact that I just like going to Baltimore and I have all my spots down there. The bad of the trip is the fact that you cannot get a crab cake outside of Camden Yards anymore. All of the various food vendors that are there and that little island in between where the bars are, like Pickles and Camden, they only do like hot dogs and sausages and hamburgers now. That's it. Nobody's doing crab cakes out there. You could obviously go into Pickles and get a crab cake sandwich or platter if you want, but then you're like eating in the bar, and I didn't have time to deal with that. You could buy one inside of Camden Yards if you want to pay like $16, and I don't even know really how good it is. The ugly is Camden has gotten rid of, so it used to have on the field level concourse, they had bars on the first and third base line. They got rid of the bar down the third base line. And that's key if you're a Yankee fan, because that's the line where the visiting team's dugout is. And so if you're like me and it's a night game, I mean, well, even the day games, because I do the Bloody Marys, but if you'd rather drink liquor at the game as opposed to beer, you got to walk all the way around, all the way to the wall, to the first base side of Camden and then hope that there's no line. Thankfully, there wasn't, because there wasn't too big of a crowd there Monday night. And then you could get your liquor. Then you got to walk back. And it's a little, you know, inconvenient. I mean, they, as far as I know, at least, I don't believe they have in-seat service. Not the way, like, say, Yankee Stadium does. Obviously, they have the beer vendors that come down, you know, the beer guys and gals. But nothing like that where you could just order it on your phone either. So not that I need the in-seat service, but I wouldn't mind a bar or some type of liquor stand at least a little closer. I'll tell you one area of Camden, though, that I did check out. And I'd been up that way before, but I went back again, and I'm glad I did. But along the right field line over on Utah Street there, cool little patio. You can stand up against the rail and watch the game. You do have a bar with liquor right behind you. There's a bunch of tabletops as well. You don't really have a view from the tabletops, but if you're balancing a couple things, maybe you just bought a hot dog or a vegan hot dog, as I had in my case, and you got to drink a beer or a cocktail or whatever the case may be. At least you do have some tabletops there where you can kind of stand and, you know, consume your food and drink peacefully while you try to watch the game, at least. So that's not a bad area to be at either in Camden. After the game, went back to the hotel, changed, and then, yeah, I did go to Fells Point, went to Little Phil's and got the dollar Jello shots, and went to Penny Black, cool little cocktail place, great place for brunch as well. Bounced around to a couple different places. I really enjoy going to Baltimore. The Inner Harbor, when it gets dark, yeah, it does get a little rough around there. I'll be honest, I wouldn't recommend doing what I did and going by yourself. You really should know your way around and certainly shouldn't be afraid to use Uber as opposed to walking, especially at night. But still a lot of love for Baltimore and just the trip down and the experience in Camden and everything else. A great time. And, you know, certainly when you get to witness a game like that, with the Yankees, that doesn't hurt either. All right, without further ado now, as we've wrapped things up, the Yankees, by the way, after they wrap up in Baltimore, will be going to Kansas City this weekend. That's a trip I've wanted to make, by the way, for a long time. I guess we'll have to try to make it next year. Yankees back home, though, on Memorial Day for a, I believe, 105 start at Yankee Stadium. Giancarlo Stanton bobblehead day as well. Doubt Mr. Stanton will be in attendance. We know he definitely won't be playing. He won't be in the lineup, that's for sure. But don't even think he'll be in attendance for that as well. Seth Everett, again, our guest this week on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Wait till you hear some of these statistics he throws your way. And he also gives a lot of great insight into the early days, because when I first met him, he was working at MLB.com. And so he talks a lot about that. This is early 2000s, mind you. So it's a while ago. But some great stories about that and today's game with Seth Everett. He joins us next here on episode number 25 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. And welcome back to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralphie Aversa. Our guest this week, you know, I actually first met him in the early 2000s. He was working for a newish platform, maybe you've heard of it, MLB.com. It's still around if you're wondering. Since then, he's been heard and seen everywhere from Forbes to Westwood One's Olympic coverage to ESPN's Baseball Tonight. He's also currently the host of two podcasts, Sports with Friends and Hall of Justice. We welcome Seth Everett on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Thanks for the time, Seth. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man. Yes, we were younger then. You were a lot younger then.
Yeah.
And I love how podcasts can promote other podcasts, because that's the beauty of podcasts over radio. Like, if you're listening to one radio station over another, you're competing. But a podcast, like, I'll tell my audience to listen to Pinstripe Lanes, because why not? Download yours, download mine, download his. You know, like, that's the beauty of why podcasting, I think, is the best.
One of the great reasons. I also like the idea that you can go, like, you could take any subject matter and you could take any angle on it and you could turn it into a successful podcast. Like, I mean, Sports with Friends is pretty self-explanatory. I've listened to it. I have not gotten into Hall of Justice, though.
Well, Hall of Justice was something I created because, you know, I'm a little older than you. And this idea that when I was coming up in the sports industry and just in the broadcast industry, you know, basic news, politics, sports, you never spoke about superheroes. If you brought up the fact that you liked Batman, it was something that you would be ostracized for. Mm-hmm. And it was something I hid. And now with the proliferation of all these comic book movies and everything that was coming out in 2015, I decided to do a show that was for grown-ups but of the sci-fi superhero genre. And so the idea was we would create this show, but it wasn't geek talk. It's not two nerds in their basement. You know what I mean? It's it's got gravitas. It's got people here with some experience and some chops. And so the idea was create that. And the reason I called it the Hall of Justice was the slogan was, if you're old enough to know what the Hall of Justice is, you're our demographic. And so that's kind of how we started. We got really lucky. We had some big time guests on that show, and we do this thing where we spoil movies as pretty much right when they come out. And as much as people think you're a jerk if you spoil a movie on Twitter, if you write on your show notes, warning, don't press play unless you've seen this film, it gets like triple the downloads. So it's really wild. It's a really cool experiment. And I think in order to do a proper review, like, we don't give the plot away, but we talk about the film as if you know what the plot is. You know what I'm saying? So we don't, like, it's not like we read a summary, but we talk about the movie and we just assume that you saw the movie too. And the numbers, like, the most listened to podcast last year was Doctor Strange. For no reason other than we put that spoiler warning and people gravitated toward it.
It's interesting to hear you talk about the dynamics behind podcasting and the analytics, because I'm sure back around the time when you and I first met and you were at MLB.com and the internet was even more of a wild, wild west then than it was today, you were probably having like similar conversations, just like replacing like basically like all the details and analytics, essentially like the numbers, right?
If you'll indulge me, I'll tell that story, because there's a bold statement that you can make. And you would be able to maybe even fill in a couple of the circles. In 2003, we had at MLB Radio, we had an exclusivity deal with something called Real Audio. You remember Real Audio?
Oh my, yeah, for the Real Player, right?
Streaming service. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And then in 2003, we didn't lose our relationship with Real, but the exclusivity part expired. And there was a meeting, and for all I know, you were there. But there was a meeting in 2003 with a bunch of people. I think it was like more than 10 people. And one of the topics of the meeting was, we have this show. Daryl Hamilton had joined me and we've done this show. How could we take this show and get it to more listeners? And someone, and if I would, the reason why I'm being so vague is I don't know who created it. But someone in that meeting said, hey, why don't we take 45 minutes of your radio show, the best 45 minutes, not just the first 45 minutes, and make an MP3, replace the live link on MLB.com's website, and put it to this MP3. People could download that to their desktops and put it on their iPods.
Wow.
We were like, that's fascinating. That's great. And then a little after we started executing that, we heard the word podcast. And we were like, we're doing that. And so there's a legitimate claim that we may have done the first ever podcast. But we don't know that because we don't know what other people were doing. You know what I'm saying? And it's not from an arrogant standpoint, but it really was. And there used to be bits on our show where callers would call. You know how callers, sports radio callers, would always propose like random trades.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I want to trade Derek Jeter for Alex Rodriguez, like some dumb trade. And we would literally respond with, now, dude, is that going to be good enough to get on the podcast? Like, that was our joke. Like, come on, that's not podcast worthy. And like podcast. And then ever since then, I can make the claim. I don't know who did the first ever podcast, but we were definitely one of the first podcasts.
Now, obviously, you guys are doing the radio show and you're doing the MP3 downloads, the podcasting as well. What was it like as far as web video back then, too? Those kind of earlier days of MLB.com?
You know, MLB.com at the time was trying to figure out how to get the tech rights for the games. And I remember I got in a lot of trouble because, do you remember Slingbox?
Oh, yeah.
I used to have a Slingbox and I used to watch baseball games on Slingbox. And people at MLB were like, no, that's against the rules. We're filing a lawsuit. You can't do that. Uh-huh. And I remember that. It really was wild to see them blossom. But the two things that they did that really were no-brainers were merchandising, ticketing, and then live streaming. And once they had the bandwidth, because don't forget, I used to host the draft for MLB.com, and that would crash the servers.
Wow.
Like, MLB.com would go offline on the draft because of the amount of people that would try to check out the draft. And my response to that has always been, if you're going to do that, you need better bandwidth. And to see the tech empire that they've built now, it's kind of fascinating because it didn't look anything like that when I was there.
We segue, and this is a perfect segue into kind of the whole reason why I got you onto the podcast this week, because it's very interesting. In that aspect, MLB, it was a very, very much on the curve, ahead of the curve, and ahead of the times, especially in relation to some of the other leagues with BAM and everything they've done with that. However, the game itself doesn't seem to have caught up with that, and they're still trying to now catch the game up to that. Seth, I'll let you, because I had seen it on your Twitter feed, the tweet from Shiambi, I think it was, last week, about how umpires notify the press box when a game is being played under protest.
Oh, right, because they go up and they like, you know how the song YMCA?
Right.
They try to mime out a P.
Right.
that's how they know.
Right.
You know, it's a personal story for me, and it's something that I'm very passionate about because baseball has meant so much to me over my career. But there has been a drastic change in the sport, and it's not a change for the better. And it originally I thought it was a personal thing. I really did, because in 2015 – my best friend was killed, the guy I was referencing before, the Daryl Hamilton, the former baseball player. I couldn't look at a baseball game. It was just a constant reminder of what I had lost. And in 2016, I tried to do a lot of soul searching and trying to figure out if I could even cover this sport anymore. But in 2017, I really would give a shout out to Dusty Baker. Really helped me in late 2016. He was still with Washington, and we sat in his office. And I told him how the camaraderie when you walk into a baseball park is the greatest feeling, like it's the greatest euphoria when you walk in there, because it's like going to your high school reunion every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk into a clubhouse and you see people. But what was different is once the first pitch was thrown, it was like ripping open an old wound, and not having him to text and not having him to call and understand and tell me something and give me my source and all that stuff. But after that meeting, my family and I went down to Washington, and because I know Dusty, and Dusty, by the way, gave the eulogy at Daryl's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a really, really emotional thing. And then in 2017, I said, you know what? I love this sport. I'm giving it a fair shot. I'm going to be a baseball insider again. I started going to work, and what I noticed was the sport was really different. And the reason why I tell the Daryl story is because I might have missed it, how this transformation started, because I had my own stuff going on. But in 2017, that was the year that baseball had more strikeouts than hits.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to notice, I said, this game doesn't seem right. It's so much slower than I noticed. And so I started doing research about it. And I had created Sports with Friends. So I was putting a lot of baseball people on and asking them, like, how is this happening? And I'll give you a couple of statistics that'll blow your head off.
Okay.
The worst one is, the most glaring, is in 2018, baseball had 11,000 less balls hit in play than 2008.
Wow.
That's not like saying, like, that's not the old man going, baseball was better in my day. Like, that's not what we're talking about. This is 10 years. I remember 2008. I covered 2008.
Right.
Like, the 2008 doesn't feel like that long ago. We're talking about less balls hit in play. So that becomes, that's grounders to second. That's fly balls to left. It's just becoming strikeouts, and it's strikeouts and walks. And so what happened as a result, and the number, the second statistic is 3 minutes and 49 seconds is the average amount of time between balls hit in play in 2018. 3 minutes and 49 seconds, dude.
Wow.
That's a song. You work,
yeah,
for a music station.
Yeah,
that's a song. So then I said a couple of things on social media, because I wrote, I was working for Forbes at the time, And I wrote an article and I acknowledged that I did my taxes during a Rockies Brewers game. And that when season one of Daredevil came out on Netflix, I watched an episode on my iPad in a press box because the game was so boring. I couldn't. I don't have that attention span. And I'm not 20. So I'm not. I don't have the millennial attention span. I have a 45-year-old attention span, and I can't pay attention to this game. I can't watch a baseball game and not do something else.
Right.
You know, so I see a lot of games. I still see the sport, but it's different. And I think the shift has had a lot to do with this. The analytics has had a lot to do with this. One thing I've learned about the shift, I'm sorry it's a long answer, but one of the things I've learned about the shift is teams are now teaching on both the major and minor league level launch angle over contact. That means that it is more important the arc in which the bat goes across your body as opposed to hitting the damn baseball.
Right.
And once I saw that and saw that that's something that not only is a trend amongst players, but it's a trend among coaches, I said, this sport's doomed. I've done extensive research on what's going on in baseball, and there are more. There's more. But what I'm saying is I think baseball has two big fights on its hands. Number one, the labor negotiation of 2021-22, and then what happens when my generation is 75.
I'll tell you the stat. I mean, the 11,000 less balls in play is
it's crazy.
Obviously crazy. But to me, the 349 between balls in play is also because what I immediately go to with that is there's more action. Like you have less time between plays in an NFL game, and people complain about the NFL being so stop and go, and especially now with the commercial breaks and this, that. And I know, you know, last season, I think especially they tried to alleviate some of that with the way they do the picture in picture commercials and so on and so forth. But people complain about that. In baseball, the wait is even longer, and it actually helps to kind of clarify this struggle that baseball is having. But then, you know, again, as I hear you talk about what's being taught at the minor league levels and what's happening in the game currently, the first thing that comes to my head is, well, this is going to get worse before it gets better now.
Correct. And there is a big divide amongst the players' union because the players' union is seeing the change in the way the practices are. You want to call it sabermetrics, you want to call it analytics, whatever you want to call it. They have demeaned the value of the starting pitcher. Now the emphasis is on bullpens. Let's talk about bullpens for one second.
Mm-hmm.
Bullpens in today's game, every one of them, even the crappy teams, have at least three guys that throw 98 plus.
Right.
What that has done is the percentages of comebacks is less than 11%. That means that if I'm getting home from a long day at work, or I go out to dinner with friends or my family or whatever it is, and it's the seventh inning, and this is a Yankee podcast, so let's use the Yankees, and the Yankees are losing 6-3, you're telling me there's a 1 in 10 shot that they're going to come back. That doesn't draw me to the television.
Right. It's funny you bring that up, by the way, too, because as we were saying before we started recording, I was at Monday night's game in Baltimore, and I remember when it was 6-1 and then I think 7-2, I'm thinking, you know, am I going to pop across the street to Pickles for these last few innings, right, or am I going to stick this out? And I'm glad, by the way, very glad I stuck it out because I got to see what heck of a comeback. But from a statistical perspective, it now makes what I saw like pretty extraordinary, to say the least, even though it was the Orioles.
Yeah, it's rare. And that's part of it. And then, you know, everything's gone to extremes. You know, when we were at baseball in the early 2000s, I used to look, especially in the month of August and really in September, where I would eliminate games. We used to preview every game of the night, and we would eliminate games if both teams were not competing for a pennant, you know, for a playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
And of the 15 games a night, because there's 30 teams and everybody's playing on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, there's always 15 games on a night. You would usually have 11 or 12 games that have some chance of somebody needing the game. And to me, like, the best thing that baseball can sell is drama. And so if the game means something, I can unabashedly say, go watch it. But if the White Sox are playing the Orioles, I can't in my right mind say that they're even trying.
Right.
And so you know, you have the Kansas Cities and the Baltimore's embarrassing. Miami's embarrassing. I mean, you have some really bad teams, and it's more demonstrative. The numbers are inflated, and I think that the bad teams look worse, and the good teams are looking better, and I don't think they're better. Like, for example, the Red Sox had this great record last year. I don't even think the Red Sox are better than their 2014. And then it becomes a marketing issue because these players are anonymous. Yeah. Nobody knows who any of them are. Mm-hmm. And you see other sports and you see the way they embrace social media, the media, just traditional media, podcasts, blogs, everything. I know who Giannis's friends are.
Yeah.
I know who Kyrie Irving likes.
Right.
You know what I mean? A fan could not pick Jose Altuve out of a lineup. And, you know, one of the things I used to challenge radio stations to do is I would say, and I still do this from time to time, is I say, come out of a random commercial break with a random audio clip of Mike Trout and give a t-shirt to the first person that can recognize who it is.
Wow.
But play A-Rod, Jeter, Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, and Barry Bonds.
Right.
Play those five, and everybody knows who they are.
Yeah.
Even David Ortiz, who doesn't even speak English.
Right. We have Seth Everett here on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralph Iaversa. Two things I want to get to real quick based off of things he said before we let you go, Seth. First of all, I'm still trying to wrap my head around the amount of time in between balls and play, but it got me thinking about a trend that we've seen at baseball stadiums across the country and here in the Bronx as well at Yankee Stadium, the emergence of not just the general admission standing room ticket, but also these GA areas where fans can kind of gather and chat with one another and be on social media and so on while they're watching the game as opposed to simply just sitting in their seat. Does that statistic that you brought up, does it kind of explain that? And I guess, have you noticed that as well, that trend in stadiums? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
My favorite story of this is in Citizens Bank Park in Philly 2 years ago. What I try to do whenever I go to a ballpark, because I can't sit still, is I case the joint. I do a lap around the whole building.
Mm-hmm.
I like to just get the feel for what a stadium looks like and feels like. And
yeah.
I pretty much do that everywhere I go. I remember going to the opening game in Philly, I want to say 2 years ago. It might be 3 years ago now, because this joke, I recycle this joke a lot. I looked at all the Phillies paraphernalia, the guys wearing T-shirts and jerseys and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And every player on the back of any of those shirts was a player that was not on the roster. Because it was, you know, think about it. You have your Jimmy Rollins shirt and your Ryan Howard shirt and your Chase Utley and Cole Hamels and Roy Halladay and Cliff Lee. And, like, no one had an Aaron Nola shirt. Like, that's changed now, so the Phillies have kind of fixed that problem.
Right.
But when you said about community, and I just always think about all the Philly fans going to the game not knowing who any of the players are. And it's like that Seinfeld joke, which is you're rooting for laundry.
Right.
Because we don't know who any of these players are. I think that what the ballparks surrounding baseball are trying to do is give you reasons to come. What they're trying to profess is the community of it. I think what they're trying to sell in baseball stadiums is that there's something about the community aspect of going to meet your friends. And it works differently in different areas. So, for example, in an area like the Bronx, it's such a public transportation heavy place that you can still get a younger generation. Go to Kansas City or Milwaukee or Texas or Anaheim, where people have to drive. Right. And what you're finding is there's a lack of interest. It's just not as appealing. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to reinvent ways. Baseball was down last year, statistics. I have more numbers. Because one thing is, I don't want to be the guy that goes on a podcast and just makes a bunch of claims and can't back them up.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball last year had, for the first time in 15 years, under 70 million. And it was the lowest attendance since 2003.
Wow.
This year, the sport is down 4.5%. And we're coming up on Memorial Day. And so the numbers aren't, it's 4.5% of last year's numbers. I think it's real. I think the problems are real. And there are two things that you can use as an excuse. Number one, weather, it does play a factor.
Yes.
But number two, if your team's not competing, we are definitely focused on what we spend our hard-earned dollars on. We don't spend it on crap. The Marlins are a big example. It's a Yankee podcast, and you know, I said when Derek Jeter bought the team, I said, buyer beware, because I had executives in baseball tell me that was the last location that they wanted. And if you think about everything, you've been to South Beach, like, you know what South Florida is like.
Right.
You know what South Beach is like and Fort Lauderdale is like, and you know what Palm Beach is like and the party town Clematis Street is in Palm Beach. Why would I get in my car, go on I-95 of the Florida Turnpike, two of the worst traffic roads in America, mm-hmm. to go to Little Havana on a Tuesday night in May to see the Marlins?
Right.
Everything that Jeter's done, he's throwing a bunch of blank against the wall and just trying to see what sticks, because he's running out of ideas. I thought the worst thing that he did was, and I don't understand what his numbers were, but the worst thing he did was he fired the play-by-play announcers. And they were long time, you know, Rich Waltz had been there for like 15 years. And for a while, you know, when I used to really track this, the Marlins used to draw ratings-wise. No one would schlep to the ballpark, but at least people were paying attention. And now I don't even think they're doing to that. So I don't know. I don't know. I know ratings for the Yes Network are up, but that's one of the few. I know Milwaukee saw a huge bump, but attendance is down across the board.
Seth Everett, again, he's the host of the Sports with Friends podcast and Hall of Justice as well. Thanks for the time and for the knowledge and for the statistics. It's great to catch up. I really appreciate you joining us this week.
You got it, my man. It's great to see you continue to have success, and I wish you nothing but the best, man. I appreciated your support back then, and I'm glad we can keep in touch.
A big thank you again to Seth Everett for joining us. He's at Seth_Everett, EVERETT, on Twitter. I'm at Ralphie Aversa. Of course, we're at Pinstripe Lanes. During the taping and editing of this podcast, the Orioles have come back to tie things at 5. However, your boy, Michael Givens, is back in the game. So hopefully he works the same magic that he worked on Monday night when I was there. And I got to see the Yankees tie it up and then go ahead with the Sanchino. All right, Yankees then, by the way, from Baltimore, go to Kansas City this weekend, a trip I've wanted to make for a long time. Guess we'll have to maybe try to do it next year. And then the Yankees are back home in the Bronx on Memorial Day, Giancarlo Stanton bobblehead day. Doubt Mr. Stanton will even be in attendance. We know for a fact he won't be on the field. Who knows when that will happen, but these Yankees keep playing the way they are. It's very interesting. You miss less and less of these stars, although I wouldn't mind Judge back. And I got a feeling Didi's going to come back before everyone else, which is fascinating considering he had Tommy John surgery in the offseason. But Didi seems to be progressing nicely. Knock on wood. All right, that's a wrap on episode 25 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Thank you for rating, reviewing, and subscribing wherever you found us. And let's go, Yankees.